The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Like live acting in that one. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Test. Okay, looks good.
You mean Jane Lynch?
Jane Lynch.
You mean Jane Lynch's alter ego?
Is
Jamie Lee Curtis and Jane Lynch take up the same space in my brain?
Yeah, I'm like that with to the point where like I can't even remember both their names at the same time. It's like Claire Danes and Kate Blanchett are the same person in my head. They're interchangeable, and I don't know why. Because if I see them side by side, they're very clearly two different
That's
women. But like in my head, I can't distinguish them.
That's the same with me and Matt Damon and Ben Affleck? Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, Marky Mark, dude.
I don't know why.
That's funny because Kate Blanchett is very much like an icon in my mind, and I don't even know who the other woman is. I mean, I've heard the name, and I'm sure if I saw
Claire
her
Danes,
face.
Yeah, she was like in Homeland, and she's been in stuff, but like, yeah, she's not as like ubiquitous as Kate Blanchett is, and yet for some reason I can't like separate the two of them in my mind. Like I always replace whenever I'll be thinking of Kate Blanchett and call her Claire Danes, and then vice versa, you know.
We should.
Claire Danes is a little more fishy looking.
Too far from all this gold.
sure. Yeah. I've been rolling for a minute, so here we go. Yeah. 3, 2, 1.
We do have a lot of gold before we start recording.
Can't
usually,
miss. We always make this Danes commentary.
Yes, we always make the grievous error of not syncing before we start talking because we always end up talking about something random and interesting about,
I know.
In this case, me not being able to tell the difference between Claire Danes or Kate Blanchett. They're the same person in my head.
You know
I
what?
I don't know why.
You know what we should be doing? We should be keeping track of stuff for mini. I mean, mini, the mini Bog collection episode is honestly a terrible idea for a podcast episode, but people mini who occupy collection. The same space in your mind.
I love that good, you said that, Jack. Jane Lynch and Jamie Lee Curtis take up the same space in my brain. Like that's
what I have a bunch of people who are like that, where it's like I couldn't list them off right now, but if like in context I'd be like, oh, is that this person or this person?
Yeah
Or like I also have this thing where I have like face blindness for very specific people, like for example Grimes. Like whenever I see Grimes, I don't realize that's Grimes. I'm like, oh, that's Grimes, okay. I've seen her like a thousand times now, and yet every time I see her I don't recognize her.
Johnny Depp was like that for me for a long time.
No, I'm with you. Johnny Depp is a very hard face to kind of like recognize, especially in movies.
I think recently he's done a lot of, like, it's funny because when he was young, he did a lot of stuff where it was just like his face. And then like when we were growing up, he did like he just did a bunch of characters, like a huge bunch of characters. Like
I'm sorry, Willy Wonka, Johnny Depp, that is not the same person.
Yeah, dude, Willy Wonka, Edward Scissorhand, Jack Sparrow, like
those are not the same people.
That regular guy from The Tourist. and then
what about Skeleton Key Johnny Depp?
And then he did a bunch of
or
like
Walrus Johnny Depp,
Transcendence.
It's called Tusk.
Tusk. He actually looked. He actually was kind of unrecognizable in Tusk a little.
Well,
bit.
They changed his nose. They like gave him like makeup to make him look.
They always
like,
change his
not
nose.
Like Johnny
they
Depp.
Give him because they give him in. Is it 21 Jump Street or 22 Jump Street where he like. I know that 21 Jump Street is the show that Johnny Depp was in, that he then makes a cameo role in the movie, I think, 21 Jump Street.
Or what about Fantastic Mr. Beast? He's like the villain in that too.
It doesn't look anything like Johnny Depp. Fantastic Mr. Beast.
Is that the name of the movie?
He's gonna give his 100,000th beast that he captured. A golden snitch or a galleon.
You know what? You know what's really sad about that?
And the movie poster is Johnny Depp's character being like,
"I legitimately did not notice that coming out of my mouth until you guys started laughing." I'm like, "What are they laughing about?"
Oh, the Fantastic Mr. Beast. That's awesome.
The crossover we've all been waiting for.
I was watching too much Wes Anderson, and now I've combined Beast with Wes Anderson.
So it's Mr. Beast. Fantastic Mr. Fox and Fantastic Beasts
and where to find them.
And where to find them. Fantastic Mr.
Wow,
Beast.
Wow, wow.
That's so funny. Anyway.
It's a crossover we deserve. Holly Weird, get on it.
Holly Weird.
I don't even remember what we were talking about. Oh, yeah, Johnny Depp. He is very relevant in the news right now.
He's a bit of a chameleon.
Yeah, he's
Johnny
relevant.
Depp.
I was going to say he's a chameleon, but...
Particularly in that movie Rango, he was literally a chameleon.
Oh,
my God.
He was.
Did you know that they didn't... They didn't mocap that movie, but they did film reference footage with all of the real actors acting out the scenes and when they recorded dialogue.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. To help behind the scenes, they have little roughed up sets of where they are in the animated stuff. But then they just like the animators use that as reference. It's actually really funny. You can find a lot of reference footage just by like looking up like blank reference footage. Like a lot of times animators will just go out in like the studio parking lot and just like have like their buddy hold like their phone or like a cam or like a small like little handheld camera and just like record them doing like a specific action or something.
That's cool.
If they just oh, I don't know how it would look if I need someone to climb up a wall in a very specific way, and they'll just do it out so they can animate it.
Well, I know my buddy Sam who like draws things. Like he studies lots of like videos of just people fighting and moving and draw things. It's interesting. Yeah. No, but it's like he has to like use like a reference, you know, like to actually see what the arm would look like in that exact situation. Whereas when I draw, I just like, that's what it would do. And then the thumb's on the wrong side of the hand.
Especially with animation. One of our first projects was a dude like pitching a ball. And it's like, oh, what do both ankles do when someone's, you know, it's like, oh, that's like, where does it go? Exactly. It's very strange.
Where
but anyway,
does it go now?
We're not talking about any of that. That was a little, the beginning of this episode was a little sneak preview for Collection Bog.
Although if this particular syndrome were to happen to you, who knows, maybe all of a sudden you'd be able to perfectly draw someone throwing a pitch without needing any reference.
Whoa.
So that's my segue into today's topic. But before we get fully into it, let's introduce ourselves.
Oh my God, I forgot about that bit.
Yeah, I am. Yes. What are our bits again? Welcome to the Bit Zone. I am your traumatic brain injury Brent.
Okay. All right. Let's see if I can top that. I am your brain damage boosted IQ B Bobby.
Okay.
I don't know.
I am your journeyman J Jack, because I'm not quite a savant yet.
Okay.
We'll say I'm just a journeyman.
Yeah.
Just a journeyman. a jack of all trades, if you will.
Yes. But a master of none.
Yeah. No, but. Is it better than just being a master of one?
Yes, you finished it.
Is that apparently that was like didn't I feel like we talked about this in an
we had
episode.
An episode about
the,
it.
Go back to the episode about that, and we're going to talk about today's episode.
I think the episode was like phrases and misconceptions and things.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like weird words of wisdom.
Yeah, let me tell you this. It was one that Bobby hosted. I can tell you that without thinking about it.
Because it was a list episode.
No. But what are you talking about today, Brent?
So, no list episode today. We're talking about something known as acquired savant syndrome.
Whoa.
So, Yeah. So before we get into what exactly that is, let me define what savant syndrome is. So there's a few different versions of this, but let me kind of just define what savant syndrome in general is so that we can get into acquired savant syndrome. So savant syndrome, now I'm sure a lot of people have heard the phrase savant before, and you sort of apply it to someone who's just like has like an otherworldly ability to do something. So, you know, maybe it's like they have like sort of like a photographic memory or can like do like complex mathematical equations or problems in their head instantly. So the idea of savant syndrome is it is a rare condition in which someone with significant mental disabilities demonstrates certain abilities far in excess of the average person. So you might think of like, say, the movie Rain Man. This is like a famous sort of dramatization of this particular syndrome where Dustin Hoffman plays a man who is autistic, but also has sort of like this like superhuman ability for counting. You might remember like the famous scene where like Tom Cruise drops like a bunch of toothpicks on the table and Dustin Hoffman just counts them instantly. You know, how many toothpicks are on the table without, you know, just seeing it for like a split second knows exactly. And so then Tom Cruise exploits his brother to count cards in that movie. It's kind of a weird movie.
Yeah, don't they go to Vegas and stuff? And
Yeah. So it's like, oh, my brother is a savant at like this counting or whatever. How about I exploit him to
doesn't he not even know?
Las Vegas.
Doesn't he find that? Isn't it like he finds out he has this brother and then like the next day he's like, I'm going to use him to get money.
Well, he like takes him out to like lunch or something and then like a bunch of toothpicks get dropped on the table and he's like, 24. Like, what? What are you talking about? 24. Yeah. Hey, he looks like, oh, wait, it counts the toothpicks. Awesome. And it's exactly 20, you know.
It is a really good movie. It's very dated, but I liked the movie a lot. Right.
I haven't seen it in a really long time. I remember thinking it was all right at the time, but I also remember thinking like, it's kind of fucked up.
Well, I think that's
like,
part of the movie. That's part of the movie is how
you're supposed
messed
to think
up
that Tom Cruise sucks.
Yeah, and like they kind of like, you know, Rain Man gets like mad.
Yeah, but what about Tom Cruise's character?
But anyway, all that is to say, this is actually, all this is to say though this is a real thing that it's not just like a Hollywood trope or whatever, that savant syndrome is like a real thing that apparently exists in 1 in 10 people with autism. Mm-hmm. They have some sort of savant like ability.
That's
at something
pretty
like say
common.
Yeah, it's pretty common, actually.
I mean, 1 in 10 of people with autism, but I mean, autism is pretty common. So
yeah, it must be like, you know, there's obviously probably different levels to it as well. Like some...
Sure, and it's not all math. It could be memory-related things. It could be, you know, different...
Calendars.
Like,
my mom... she met someone like a couple weeks ago that could tell you the day of the week of any date without any...
Looking
up, like, just like
it's actually a very but we'll talk about I have some examples later we'll talk about, but that's actually like a more common one in acquired savant syndrome too. Mm-hmm. Is kind of this like recall to be able to know exactly, you know, what day of the week a day was just based on the date.
It's insane.
Kind of crazy.
I wonder if because the most common symptoms, I don't know, of autism is the lessened social skills, a detriment to their, I don't know how to say that. They have diminished social ability. They have diminished social ability. I wonder if there's like someone with savant syndrome who's like just super good at like whose savant syndrome thing is just like knowing how to socialize.
Oh, that's interesting.
or where it's like
an ultimate pickup artist or something.
where they're just like like they have like the Hollywood superhuman-esque thing. Mm-hmm. And they're also, well, I guess it would just be, they would just be, I don't know, for lack of a better term, quote unquote, a regular person, right?
Yeah, because you wouldn't know.
Because the Hollywood savant syndrome, you're like, oh, they can't socialize, but oh, they can carve an elephant from memory.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, I'm not gonna name names, obviously, but I had a buddy in high school who was like severely autistic, and the most insane like singer you would ever hear in your entire life, like the most skillful singer, like could hit any note, like it was insane. And watching him go up on stage and perform, it was like seeing a different person, you know. It was just incredible. But it's, so it's not like the most rare thing. I feel like a lot of people know someone who has some kind of ability, but suffers from like social autism, kind of.
Sure. Or like, for example, for me, my brother is, he's on the spectrum. He's not autistic. He had like what you would call Asperger's back in the day. Now it's just, you know, he's on the spectrum. Mm-hmm. But he was like a super talented woodworker.
Back when we could call it what we want.
Yeah, so Asperger's. We all know like what we're talking about. Yeah, but now it's classified as, you know, autistic spectrum syndrome or whatever. And he was like an extremely talented like woodworker. He could just like kind of build anything, you know. Like he went to a tech school to kind of do that. It was actually kind of like a really sad thing in our family because like he was really good at it. But like the school that he tried to go to, like they didn't like understand like sort of like autism or the spectrum or whatever. And they're like, oh, well, we can't let him use, you know, like heavy machinery because he's, you know, special needs or like on the spectrum. So they basically like kicked him out of the program, even though he was really good, because they're like, oh, well, you know, he can't. He shouldn't be allowed to work with this stuff because, you know, he's socially awkward, I guess. You know, like, you're like,
and normal people be cutting their fingers off every day using that stuff, but they don't care.
One of those things where it was like
normal people, quote unquote.
Yeah, where it was like back then he was just like there was just such a bad understanding of so much, and it was just like so many people got lumped into the special needs, and I'm sure it was just like the special needs. People with special needs cannot do X, Y, and Z, you know?
Yeah.
Like that, which just sucks.
Yeah, it's super frustrating. Yeah. But you know, even at that, like I have some experience with that with him because he's just like really, or he was like extremely good at origami too, of all things. Like he would just like make origami just for fun and just make these really so complex things, you know? It's like our house would just have fucking origami shit all over the place because he's just like, oh, I'm just gonna whip up just like this like crazy elephants, you know,
yeah,
or giraffe and shit. And it's like,
there's too many goddamn cranes everywhere.
Yeah,
I can't get anywhere.
so that's basically what savant syndrome is. Now let's talk about the topic at hand today, which is acquired savant syndrome, which is a little bit different. This is acquired savant syndrome is the presentation of often extraordinary scholarly skills that emerge after a non-disabled individual suffers a traumatic brain injury or illness. So basically the idea that someone who is, you know, lives life, you know, completely normal, quote unquote, is non-neurodivergent or whatever, who suffers some sort of traumatic head injury, and it all of a sudden, you know, unlocks some sort of like savant like ability in them. So, like some of the things we described, like, you know, Bobby, you were just talking about, like the calendar recall thing,
yeah,
or musical talents or mathematical talents, all of a sudden that these people never had any aptitude in before are just like unlocked, and they have like a savant like knowledge or ability in these things.
Or like one of them that you'll hear a lot is like language. I don't know if you're going to talk about this later in the show, but like language, like some people will. Oh, they'll wake up from a car accident and it's like they'll be speaking full Spanish, and it's like, how?
Yeah, I couldn't like locate any specific examples of that.
Yeah, it's more of a tale like you hear about.
I mean, it is real. Like the studies have that I'll talk about have seen that as a case, but they didn't provide any specific examples of that particular one. But that is one. Like people become polyglot, meaning like knowing multiple languages after suffering traumatic brain injury, which is.
Wow.
Crazy to think about that, like these things could just be sort of like just locked away in our brains. But we'll kind of get into that more maybe at the end when we open it up a bit and sort of speculate more about like what this means about the human brain in general. But let me kind of dive more into sort of acquired, kind of the science of acquired savant syndrome. Even with such newfound skills, traumatic brain injuries can provide utterly, you know, so people basically who suffer this, you know, might unlock certain abilities, but it doesn't also like mean you're just like an X-Man or whatever. Yeah. You know, you're not just like a superhero. A lot of these people still, even though they like unlock these abilities, also suffer from a lot of the other side effects of traumatic brain injury.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, you know, it's not all like hey, let's all go smash our heads into a wall and see if, like, we can play the piano really well. You know? Like, these people still suffer the symptoms of traumatic brain injury.
I don't know, it seems worth it.
Also can lead to a lot of, you know, debilitating brain, you know, injuries and illnesses down the road, like Alzheimer's or dementia are very high in occurrences in people who end up having acquired Savant syndrome, which is, you know, really sad and unfortunate, but it's, you know, a reality of the situation. So let's move into this next section here of understanding acquired Savant syndrome. So the astounding abilities of acquired Savant syndrome often materialize following traumatic injury to the left hemisphere of the brain, commonly a left anterior temporal lobe injury. Hmm. So this very specific area of the brain tends to be the kind of injury that we see that sort of unlocks this acquired Savant syndrome. So very specifically, the left anterior temporal lobe is sort of like where we see these injuries that actually cause acquired Savant syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
In every case of Savant syndrome, the right hemisphere of the brain compensates for the injury of the left hemisphere. In other words, acquired Savant syndrome can present someone with new abilities after a traumatic brain injury where none of these abilities existed prior due to the compensation of the right hemisphere of the brain for the left hemisphere's injury.
Mm-hmm.
It is widely believed that these newly surfaced skills are not newly created but newly released compensatory abilities, meaning that the reducing or offsetting of unpleasant or unwelcome effects of something. So because of the trauma to that specific area of the brain, it's sort of like this is like the brain's way of like overcompensating for the fact that there's this traumatic injury to one spot. So it isn't sort of like I guess the science around it, and maybe I'm misunderstanding. So if you're a brain surgeon or a neuroscientist, email us at brainbugglepodcast@gmail.com. Because
oh
I'm not.
Oh my God. But, I hope there's no neurosurgeons who listen to this podcast, dude.
Yeah.
We're in trouble.
That's embarrassing for us. Yeah.
But from the way I'm understanding this, basically what's happening is it's not like a new skill just like all of a sudden appears.
Yeah.
Actually happening is that it was there to begin with, and it's just that because the brain has to so overly compensate from one hemisphere to the other that it makes these sort of savant-like abilities surface. So like maybe this person could have, you know, developed these skills naturally if they had trained in them in a more sort of normal way.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe this person could have become a great piano player had they trained in it for many years, but because they have suffered this injury and now this one particular part of the brain is overcompensating for the traumatic injury, they're kind of releasing this aptitude that they maybe could have had. Like they maybe already had the neural pathways for these abilities, but now they're just like extra heightened by the fact that there's this traumatic injury.
It kind of makes me think of like, it's just like those neural pathways exist in your brain somewhere. They just aren't connecting to each other, and so when maybe one side of the brain is working more to overcompensate, it's starting to make those connections that were like, you've got like, oh, this is a, I know music, I know how like notes work, and I know how the scale works, and then like, oh, I know how like numbers work, and then it's like bloop, makes those connections, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, because one thing I think about is we all have memories like from our life locked away in our brain that we every now and then you'll just be like, oh, I remember that dream I had when I was like 4 years old. What made me think of that? And so they're in there somewhere. It's just like they're not popping up to your everyday life. And so it's kind of cool to think that this could,
dude, I think that's awaken one of the, those things. I think that's one of the crazy secrets of the human brain.
Gotta unlock 100% of our brain.
Well, I mean, like not like as a meme, but I feel like if your brain was like, if you were like consciously aware of all of the knowledge that was in your brain at all times, I feel like you'd go insane. You know, like I feel like it's one of those evolutionary things that kind of was developed probably to help us maintain and sort all of this like information that is going in here.
Yeah, it's like whatever our reality is to us is more important than like the information in our brain. And so like something you think about is how we process emotions and things like, and that's why like, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, like that's so helpful for people because they're able to kind of take the things that are in their brain and connect them in ways that make sense and process them.
And build up that neuroplasticity to like build these new pathways and like maybe a sort of like undo other ones that have been established over the course of your life.
Yeah,
like
habits
are recognizing those pathways. Like, oh, my, when I this happens, my brain goes to this.
Yeah,
and being aware of that means you can try to like build new pathways and be like, when that happens and I feel this, I should reflect on that and be like, why do I feel that way? Is that rational?
Exactly. You know? And that's so important. And I think what you were saying, Jack, is interesting because it's both an evolutionary advantage because it keeps us kind of focused on the here and now and what's in front of us, which is like life or death. But we live in very like sedentary lives now. And so it's what used to be an advantage is now becoming kind of a disadvantage. Like we're ignoring things that we shouldn't be ignoring because our problems are much less, oh my God, a bear is going to eat me, and more, oh, every time I, you know, do this, I react wrongly. I don't know if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, we need to go back to worrying about if we're going to get eaten by lions and less worrying about if I got my taxes in on time, you know?
It is interesting how, like, we would be better equipped to deal with, like, that kind of life or death situation.
Yeah, so I think the easy solution that we're all kind of just like tiptoeing around at this point is just get Joe Exotic out of prison, have him release his tigers into the public, and you know what? Things will sort themselves out right quick
because I'm glad
we'll have
said
our priorities.
Survival
in check.
Of the fittest.
We were tiptoeing around that. Actually.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, honestly,
I'm glad you said it, Brent.
Yeah, someone had to say it.
I thought you were gonna bring up a serious point and be like, I don't want to say it, but the and prims were right. And I was gonna be like, no, you're not right.
Oh,
it's
no.
incorrect. I hate, if you're an and prim listener to Brain Boggled, you better not be. You better stop being one of those two things.
What's and prim? Yeah.
Anarcho-primitivist.
Is that like, you gotta eat liver?
Yeah, I mean, kind of. It's more
no society, just back to tribal hunter gatherers.
Yeah, it's if you've ever seen the like Return to Monkey memes, that where it's like there are egregious human rights violations because of modern industry and society, and it's like, shut up, no.
Well, I think the thing is we need to evolve and. I don't think that going backwards to our
eye roll emoji
is a good thing.
Eye roll emoji. We need to evolve, says Bob. What are you saying?
We need to evolve. I sound like a super villain.
No. But what were you saying? What were you saying? I'm sorry.
No. It's all. It's all good. It's all good. I think that we need to just become lizard people, like, and we need to all evolve past these dumb little monkey brains. That's what I was saying. No, I'm just kidding.
Careful, Bobby. People already think we're lizard people.
Bob's a transhumanist, it turns out.
I think we do get stuck in these, like, very, like, kind of primitive, like, we were kind of evolved to deal with things a certain way, and we kind of don't reflect enough on how we react to things and how maybe we should change the way that we react to things. And so I think that, you know, when we're talking about stuff like this, you kind of, there's ways to trick your brain into working better for yourself and for your mental health while still using the way that our brains have evolved to kind of simplify everything. And that's like, not to sound like a broken record, but like cognitive behavioral therapy. Like, that's kind of the whole point of it is to trick yourself into understanding the reality of your situation. Because your brain is very good at getting stuck into habits. You know,
you're saying I should imagine the taxes are a lion.
Yes.
And
well, no. What I'm saying, and this, I know you're joking, but what I'm saying is that our brains don't understand why we're afraid of taxes because we can't fight or flight. We can't run away from it. You can't, like, there's no decision to be made.
Tell that to Wesley Snipes, my guy.
So I don't know. We live in a very weird world for the way that our brains were built. So it is interesting. And I think that's why when you see these kind of acquired savant syndrome things, it's like, mm-hmm. It's very cool because I don't know. It's like, it's almost like showing how amazing our brains really are and how like there's a lot of potential for, you know, having control over, or I guess not having control. I don't know.
I was talking about this with someone the other day to go off of your point of like, the brain isn't really built for that. It's like, I forget, there's like a concept where it's like the human brain is essentially programmed to deal with like practical, manageable numbers.
Yeah.
It gets to a point where the number is so big that the average, you know, standard, whatever, you know, the usual programming for the human brain is like, whatever, I'm never ever gonna have to deal, like, numbers that big don't mean anything. What the heck even is that? Like, whatever. And it just like, where it's like you're literally just incapable of conceiving that number, of imagining how much it would be to hold in your hand. And I think it goes back to the same point of like, not the same point, to bring up a new thing of like, they say that you can only maintain like, what is it, like 100, 200, like actual relationships with people where you remember names and faces or whatever. And it's like, because you just can't handle that.
Now, do you think that it's sort of the brain partitioning things so that like, it's like, oh, well, I can't think about dinner tonight if I'm thinking about more than 100,000 numbers.
No, I think it's the brain. I literally designate. Think it's the brain reaching the limit. I think it's the brain. I think it's the evolutionary limit of the brain saying we don't need a band bigger than 200.
Yeah, that's our 200 is our tribe.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah.
Anything outside of that is just too much to consider.
But
and I wonder.
Oh, go ahead, Brent. Sorry.
And I wonder if that's why we have such a hard time like wrapping our heads around like what we see happening with, say, like COVID's. You know, like how many people have died from that, and like most people are kind of like, well, you know, it just is what it is. You know, kind of shrug it off. Like, yeah, a million people are dead, but or more than that worldwide, and we're kind of just like,
yeah. At one point, we just stopped talking about the number.
Yeah, and then you might have like, you know, not that, you know, these are both horrible, but then you might have like a mass shooting where like two people die, you know, but if it's nearby you, that like two people being killed in this horrible way, it's not like more impactful somehow than like the 4 million people dead around the world from this, you know, infectious disease.
Well, we're still talking about the Boston bombing, you know, and that was only like a couple people. And like, if you look at Boston bombing compared to the amount of people that died from, like, let's say COVID in Boston, it's like not even close. But we have this annual thing where we're like, oh my God. And don't get me wrong, it's like both situations are horrible. But we tend to be like, at least the people that live close to Boston are like, oh my God, like that was a horrible day. And people that maybe live on the other side of the earth are kind of like, oh, it's just a couple people. Like, what do you mean? Like, it's just a bombing.
Yeah,
because
it's your community. Like,
I think you're onto something.
It's what your brain can understand.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing. You know, I wonder how that stuff kind of like affects some of the issues we have now, like with this like inability to kind of like sort of grasp these like bigger issues. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's like too much for our brains to even really handle, so we don't. Yeah. You know,
and I think to kind of like to bring it to a different topic too, like I think social media is part of what makes it so kind of toxic in certain aspects, is like we associate our tribe with this like social media presence of just whoever's under that umbrella, and you're like, it's not actual people, it's just like people around the world. And so we see that as our tribe, even though there's no names and faces to it. It's just kind of like, that's my tribe, but you don't know any of them.
Yeah, or it's or in a more literal sense, it's just names and faces.
Yeah,
you know? Like it's like you don't know anything. Yeah, as you said.
Yeah,
it's very interesting stuff.
But I do wonder. Like, sorry to keep pulling this conversation away.
No, this
but
is super super interesting stuff. So I'm totally down to go down this rabbit hole.
I do wonder though, like if it is the limit, like of the human brain, because the reason I say it might not be is because of like savant syndrome, where you see like that maybe it is a physical, it's a manufactured limit by the brain to not overwork that part of the brain when you're trying to survive every day. So I think about like a computer when you're running too many softwares at once and you have to designate like processing to like one app. I think the brain like puts its own limits on how many numbers we can calculate. And so when something like savant syndrome happens, it's like, yeah, you take away some of the social stuff, but you're able to, like Brent said earlier, put more processing power into one side of the brain that unlocks the true potential of like our math skills.
Yeah, but isn't that I mean, I think in that scenario you're arbitrarily putting more value on the mathematical side of the brain aspect than the aspects that they're losing out in. Right? Like,
yeah.
I think it still is like we see, like it still is the limit of the brain. It's just
it has to
pull from this other side so it can extend the limit on one.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how I see it. But yeah.
Yeah. So then I guess what my curiosity is, kind of bringing back to what Bobby's been talking about with the cognitive behavioral therapy, is it possible to have both?
Mm.
Is it possible if we were to say
to unlock
put, like a
100%.
Focused effort on retraining our brains a little bit more to like maybe kind of solidify this neuroplasticity and these other pathways? Could we, you know, say, have ability to like sort of move outside of our evolution and sort of like forge kind of like forward in like a new
only if
way?
We unlock 100% of our brain.
Yeah, only if we fucking Bradley Cooper pill unlock that shit.
Listen, limitless.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
But then we might burn too much. With could we? You're not even thinking about should we unlock should? All that brain?
Well, if you think about like human metabolism, like we think of like exercise as the way that we like burn calories, but like
I don't think
really.
That way.
But yeah, because
speak
you're,
for yourself.
Yeah, because you've talked to me, and, so I think that you know we spend a lot of our calories on brain power, and our brain we even deal with it today. Like if we get overstressed, we shut down, and that kind of goes back to the neuroplasticity. Like how much can your brain stretch itself thin? And I wonder if we were able to find a way, like you said, Brent, to make our brain as stretchy as possible,
dude,
and overwork it a little bit more. I mean, like computer processors get better and better and better. Is there a way for our brains to kind of improve using future technology? I don't think we'll be able to do it without some kind of external technology, though.
So are we did. Now are we talking like a Neuralink situation here?
I was thinking more like organic tech, like not really like a Neuralink that like stores things for you, but something more like let's say there's some kind of like
eugenics.
Cellular.
Like let's just say it. Bob is talking about selective breeding.
Eugenics. Yes.
He's talking about forced evolution. He's talking about. I mean, kind of. That's what you're saying. I guess.
Whoops, stumbled into eugenics again.
I know.
Whoops.
I'm saying more like. I'm saying more
okay,
like
it's
DNA.
Eugenics is such that gray line, dude. It's everyone wants to talk about. Everyone wants to say, but what if we just bred humans like dogs to be the fastest, smartest, strongest? You know, like. Come on,
well,
dude.
It's a weird conversation, but I'm reading this book about. It's called It's called Lifespan, and it's by David Sinclair.
There's a lot of selective breeding of humans in Dune.
Yeah, well,
that's true.
So
yeah, the Bene Gesserit are all over that shit. Yeah.
The interesting thing about
book three, Brent.
Nah, I've been taking a little bit of a break from it.
Okay, let me know when you finish book three.
Yeah, okay. Hopefully by the next podcast. I'm like halfway through, so. But anyway,
oh, okay,
Bobby,
okay,
go
okay,
on.
Okay.
I don't have any CD. I'm looking for a prop, but it's a podcast. So, The way that, that David Sinclair describes it in his book is our brains and our, well, it's not our brains, it's our DNA is sort of like a think of a CD. And when you have a CD for a really long time, it gets scratches on it. And so our body and our DNA is kind of like, as it ages and oxidizes, we kind of get more and more scratches. And the more scratches there are, the more your body kind of like skips things and it has a harder time playing the DNA.
The more funky it is and the more you can get on there.
I'm going to do an episode about this, so it's going to be a lot more research. And so I'll just kind of like...
About spinning discs?
Yeah. And so this is just the tip of the iceberg, which that saying is kind of dumb because icebergs actually... that's a whole other conversation. They don't actually
the iceberg. That's
they
a
don't
good
go
saying,
lower.
Bob.
They don't,
what do you mean
go,
they don't
lower
go lower
because
they don't.
It's a myth? Center. No, the center of gravity would pull it so that it's the same on because it's a buoyant thing. It's not just gonna have
bruh.
More
if I have an ice, if I have an ice cube, ice cubes don't float half in and out of a glass of water.
They kind of do though.
They kind of do though.
Have you ever seen an ice cube like vertical in a cup by itself?
What do you know?
No, it floats to the side.
Because ice is slightly less dense than water. Ice is one of the only pure solids that floats on itself.
There's a whole thing about it online where like this is the problem. I didn't want to go down this road.
Show me a picture of an iceberg. I'm gonna look at an iceberg right now. No, and if it's underwater, Bob, you owe me $5.
This is dumb. It's half underwater. Anyway, so let's go back to the conversation at hand, which I completely forget. What was I saying? Oh yeah, the CD thing. So the technology that David Sinclair is developing is basically a way to polish the CD so that it can help the body read it without skipping beats, even though it's kind of just filling in gaps and it's not really like going back to the DNA being completely intact as it is when you're really young, but it helps the body better read what was supposed to be there by filling in these gaps and kind of like, you really should think of it like CD polish on a CD. Like it can actually help the CD player read it better, even though, you know, it's still not the original CD. It's not now skipping beats. So you can kind of like put the pieces together yourself. And so that's it. The tech he's developing is purely like organic, a way for the DNA to be able to regenerate cells more efficiently. And so that's kind of how I see it, is like it wouldn't be like necessarily like digital technology. It would be more like we take a pill and that pill helps our DNA create cells more efficiently.
Sort of like a CRISPR sort of thing, maybe.
Yeah.
A little bit,
yeah. Or, it's very yeah. much like a CRISPR thing. Like it's, I mean, it pretty much is that. But it's not changing your DNA. It's just helping your body. It's basically de-aging.
So, gotcha. So it's a little bit different than CRISPR because CRISPR is sort of like altering the DNA.
Yeah.
Whereas like in this case, you're more just like sort of like supporting the DNA that's yes. there to function better.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. It's more yeah. just you're repairing the DNA to be like it would have been when you were in your 20s.
Yeah. Got it.
Which that's is still unnatural, but it's like if you yeah. think about a lot of the causes of death, Alzheimer's, like heart disease, diabetes, it's all, a lot of it is very heavily due to aging, because aging is what causes your body to stop being able to fight those things off. So aging is really a disease in itself. That's what he says, at least. So yeah, the search for immortality continues, but that's my spiel.
All right. So I guess I'm going to get back into the actual, acquired savant syndrome stuff just a little bit more.
Jack's
that was
sitting
a
there
fun,
figuring
that was
out.
A fun little,
everything
that, was a fun
that I'm reading about icebergs,
really
Bob,
that
says
went.
That most of Jack's, it's underwater.
Dude, okay, Brent, get back to the podcast. I'm also
I'm
looking
send
it up.
You, so, I'm going to send you this website, Bob, because this one seems real
send them
real
some
good.
Literature.
This one seems
send the boy
real,
some
this
literature.
This one seems real good. Okay. It's got equations and everything, so you can all read
right,
them
all, right,
all right. out to your heart's content.
All right, cool. So... let's kind of go through, we sort of talked about this already a little bit about symptoms and manifestations of acquired savant syndrome, but I'll just quickly run through the list of potential things that have been measured as like acquired savant syndrome results. Mm-hmm. Aptitude for music, usually piano or performance. So, you know, unlocking some sort of musical ability. Calendar calculating, which Bobby, you mentioned with your mom's friend.
Yep.
I have an example of a guy we're going to talk about a little bit later who has a very similar ability that you described. Mathematics, such as lightning calculations, which is, it struck me as funny when I first heard it, but they just mean like the ability to do calculations with like incredible speed, not specifically calculating lightning.
Calculate lightning.
Yeah, lightning calculations. Bzap. So then arts, so painting, sculpting, drawing, or spatial mechanical skills such as accurately measuring distances without any tools. And then there's some other less common ones like perfect appreciation of time without a clock.
They call that dead reckoning.
Yeah, totally. And then we got incredible knowledge in fields such as statistics or neuroscience.
French is totally physiology. French is totally unimpressed dad me, by the way.
Did anyone, yeah, like, yeah, anyone else see that? Good job, Jack. Good
did
job, Jack.
Else see that?
Great. That was great.
It.
That was great.
God damn it.
Sorry, this
dude.
Is me trying to burn through the stuff I have in my notes as quickly as possible so we can get back to the more open discussion.
about iceberg.
I had a little fun factoid about dead reckoning. That was
look it up, you nerds.
Keep going.
But then we got Bobby, you mentioned polyglot-ism or language faculties that are unlocked. So polyglot meaning the knowledge of multiple languages. And then we also have strange sensory discrimination in touch, vision, or smell. So basically it's sort of like some people will experience go check out our previous episode on synesthesia. Some people will actually have synesthesia unlocked as sort of like their acquired savant syndrome. So people who didn't have synesthesia,
like a new ability,
we'll just have synesthesia as a result. So totally.
Wow.
So how many people must be closely related? Yeah. Again, I mean, I don't remember specifically in that episode like what areas of the brain were sort of measured in sort of synesthesia. I don't know if it was the exact same sort of temporal left right brain situation.
I'll go
that.
On the record saying I'm confident it was the exact same.
Okay. We're gonna go on record and say that.
Yep.
Jack will take the fall there. I did the episode, I don't remember. Go listen to it again. I'm not going to. That was a good episode.
Sue me.
That was one of my
I'd
favorites.
Like to see you try to see what you could sue me for in this.
Yeah. So let's take a just quick and see how many people have acquired savant syndrome. So like I mentioned earlier, about 1 in 10 individuals with autistic syndrome have savant syndrome, as we sort of defined at the top of the episode, while less than 1% of non-autistic individuals with acquired savant syndrome end up with that. So a very, very small amount of the population have acquired savant syndrome. This includes individuals with a developmental or intellectual disability or brain injury. Most of those with this syndrome are male, with relatively few reports of female savants, although part of that is that due to the fact that more males are affected with autism than girls, and also, if we're being
looks
honest,
like
bias,
boys rule again and girls drool.
Yeah, and there's just like a certain amount of bias in sort of, you know, some of these studies that has to be acknowledged.
Yeah,
well.
I feel like there is 100% sexism in an autistic person saying, oh, hey, look at how good I am at this thing. And then people like having enough patience to follow them out or believe them or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, this is a problem that we see just sort of like in medical research in general. Maybe we'll do an episode down the road. It's just general bias towards white men in medical research. It's a lot of medical research is heavily, a lot of like people in these studies tend to be white males. So which kind of, you know, affects like how reliable is this data across the
this
board?
This is just a quick side note, and like this is just supposed to be. I think this is just like look at how prevalent, you know, the systems in place are. But I was reading an article that was saying that certain studies, which like regardless of the doctor's background, they would have that like predisposition to believe. Like men over women's accounts, and like white men over whatever, when telling stories of like their symptoms and yep. like pain and stuff,
yep.
which is just kind of interesting. But continue, Brent.
Yeah, no, totally. We could totally do a whole episode on a lot of those biases because they seem to be pretty real and pretty. There's a lot of different studies happening now that are kind of showing these inherent biases. But anyway, let's now get into some examples of people who have had this acquired savant syndrome. So first we'll talk about this guy Orlando Sorrell. Orlando Sorrell enjoyed a normal childhood like other kids until a baseball accident when he was 10 years old. On January 15th of 1979, Sorrell was hit by a baseball on the left side of his head. He was hit so hard that he fell to the ground and lost consciousness for several minutes. The 10-year-old later got up and continued playing the game, which is kind of wild. Yeah. That's a 70s for you right there. He gets knocked out for like 2 minutes straight and then just gets up like, you're fine. Does you got your bell go rung. Get back house. In the game, kid.
And he, was the and he was the best kid to ever play the game from then on.
And well, he went on to change his name to Babe Ruth.
The accident was followed by periods of him suffering from severe headaches. When he lost the headaches, though, Orlando Sorrell gained the ability to perform calendrical calculations, or the calendar calculations we talk about, with amazing speed and accuracy.
Mm.
Give him any date and he'll tell you what day of the week it was. He could also recall the specific weather in degrees for that day. So he could tell you like what the highs and low temperatures were for the day, what the weather was like that day, what
Weird.
like encyclopedic recall. And now just for the listeners at home, I will have a brain bloggle to go with this one. So go to brainbogglepodcast.com to check it out. Cause I am going to put some videos in here.
Mm.
We're not going to watch most of these on the pod now. I'll share a couple of them with you guys cause they're more visual and you can kind of just like watch some of them. But this one in particular, there's a video interviewing this guy. I'll put that in the brain blog if you so choose to want to watch that. It's about like a 5-minute video.
I'll be checking it out.
Of this guy kind of just doing this like crazy recall of dates and like the weather, like all that stuff. It's very, very interesting.
Now we should we should talk to Ethan about this, Brent, because he got this is maybe I don't know. Sorry, Ethan, if this is completely incorrect. But he got
We're doxing you.
He got hit in the head with a golf ball flying full speed at a driving
and
range.
And he's not any smarter at all.
No, but Ethan has Ethan has an incredible ability with perfect pitch. He knows.
Yeah.
He can tell you like any note, any song, like how any song starts, and he's never been wrong. Like he's done it like 200 times. It's like a party trick.
Oh, now that you mention it, Bob. Okay, this is gonna sound bad. I'm not saying obviously I know you're not autistic, Ethan, but there was a person with autism in my theater department in high school who had perfect pitch.
Hmm.
Yeah. Now I guess my question to you, Bob, is did Ethan have this perfect pitch prior to the golf ball accident, or did he gain it?
That's what we got to ask him. I remember him saying that he didn't like. He said he's always had it, but like he didn't know it. Like, and then he like figured out that he had it like like in the last few years. So I'm like wondering, like maybe he didn't have
Here's
it.
An
maybe
idea.
The golf ball unlocked it.
Let's
sorry, Squee.
Let's not tell Ethan, and let's see if he listens to the podcast.
He's not gonna listen to it.
He's not.
I mean, he's
going.
Guested on the podcast. Of course, he's not going.
No, yeah.
He has to hear us
been
all
on here before
week.
Knows
no,
better.
I kind of. It's actually. I mean, it's kind of. I mean, you would think it's a bad thing, but it's kind of nice to know that everyone that I know that I originally told about the podcast has like stopped listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
Because that means that there's more other people.
Yeah.
Who have found
so we have just like
real.
Natural listeners and people we like forced to listen to in our lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, the good thing too is like we've been slower on putting out episodes but you know what? Like we have so many now that like if you want to go back and listen to older ones, we have so many. Like yeah, so real. you can spend I think like 4 months listening to us talk nonstop or something.
Yeah. Totally.
It's not quite
I don't know why. I don't know why you'd want to, but yeah. Anyway, so let me talk about this next guy, Anthony Ceroria. Ceroria. I'm probably butchering your last name. I'm so sorry. It looks Italian. I don't know. So Anthony here. Anthony was this guy who was already kind of like a pretty respected, impressive individual. He was specialized. He was a doctor who specialized in orthopedics. Sorry, kind of like a smart dude. But back in 1994, when Anthony was 42 years old, he had just finished taking a call from a public phone. You definitely know it was 1994 when someone was using a payphone.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. Standing next to the telephone, Anthony was struck by lightning.
Whoa.
His heart reportedly stopped from the incident, but thanks to coincidence, he was resuscitated by an intensive care unit nurse waiting to use the phone. So basically, just imagine the scene. This dude's at like a public payphone, like one of those ones that is just like open air, not like a, you know, like TARDIS like telephone box in the UK where you go inside. You just got this like telephone picture this. For you fucking Zoomers, I don't even know if you know what I'm talking about. There used to just be like landline telephones just in the middle of the street, just that people could use at any point in time.
You had to swerve around them when you were driving. It was a real
yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, so you know, so imagine you got this doctor here. He's on this payphone outside, just making his phone call. Standing behind him is this nurse who's also waiting to make a phone call. And then this dude just gets fucking struck by lightning right in front of her, and so like. Imagine that.
No, that's not
imagine
that
how fucking
funny.
Wild that is.
That would be it's literally like it's the saying we used to say for things not happening.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's just like amazing to me. And also like good on her. I mean, I know she was an intensive care nurse, but having like the wherewithal in that moment where witnessing someone struck by lightning in front of you to actually like fucking like resuscitate the person.
Seriously,
like,
yeah, that's incredible.
But
I mean, getting struck by lightning's got to be like the funniest accident that can happen to someone.
Yeah, yeah, especially if you survive it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But so after the incident, which left him with burns and affected his memory, Anthony had an quote unquote insatiable urge to listen to classical music. He later had his own piano, bought his own piano, and taught himself how to play very quickly. Tony spent most of his time playing the piano and composed his own music. The sudden musical savant later debuted as a pianist at the Goodrich Theater in New York. So I'm going to throw this video in the chat for you guys if you want to take a look at it.
Hell yeah.
So, again, this will also be in the blog, so head over to brainbogglepodcast.com if you want to check that out. This guy Anthony Ceroria, basically just like playing like ridiculous concert like savant level piano. It's pretty crazy. It's a long video, so you don't have to watch all of it, but just to kind of get like a sense of like what's going on here. It's just pretty crazy.
Wow, I'm watching it now. It's
yeah.
How old
that's
was
crazy.
This
guy?
When
never
he got
played
struck by lightning.
1994.
Do we know how old he was?
42.
Interesting.
Wow. You know, yeah, the so old saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Unless
you shock him with
just
lightning.
Just let him get struck by lightning, dude.
You know that saying, you can't teach a dog. You know that old saying?
Yeah, the old saying.
No, that one, don't teach a dog. Just don't do it.
You can't teach a dog that tricks are for kids.
Yeah. Awesome. I've been saying it for years. It's about.
I mean,
time
couldn't I just bang
listen.
On a piano and say that I'm avant-garde?
And you're just creating a new style of music that we just don't understand yet.
Man. Can't I just do totally. That and people can pay me money?
Humans won't understand money, this until the 2005. I don't know. I'm getting distracted by my siblings.
Yeah, this particular video is from 2013.
There was an invader
but like
in your room, I didn't want to say.
There's multiple invaders.
In case you got scared. Yeah.
Invaders Zim.
There's multiple invaders, yeah.
There's
Invaders Zim.
Who are these interlopers?
Interloper!
But yeah, anyway. So I know this particular video is from 2013, but like the Savant like ability started like pretty early. It's just this happens to be when this video is from. So next, let's talk about this guy, Alonzo Clemons. So Clemons is now known as a famous American sculptor whose works are often focused on animal designs and fetched as much as $45,000 a pop.
Oh, wow.
As a child, Alonzo Clemons suffered from a severe brain injury, which basically left him, you know, developmentally disabled. But as a child, he started to show this incredible aptitude for clay sculptures that he had not had before the injury. Now, I couldn't find exactly how old he was when the injury happened. I'm sure it's out there somewhere. I couldn't find it when I was searching this guy in particular. But at some point in his child, he was a perfectly just like, you know, average, quote unquote, non-neurodivergent child who suffered a severe brain injury and then had developmental disabilities as a result of the brain injuries. But he also then became this like really incredible sculptor and could just like make any sort of animal from memory in these sculptures. And then I got, again, another video here I'm going to drop into the chat. And again, you know, go check it out at the blog if you are so inclined. This guy, you kind of skip around for this one. It's like a 30-minute video, but oops. Yeah, I sent the same video again.
Brent,
your boy done goofed it.
I'm going to send the embarrassed emoji. Oh, I don't have
Oh,
it.
No.
I'm going to send an embarrassed gift.
Daddy can't copy and paste links from his phone. Oh, no. Ew.
This is Brent right now.
Why is this giving me such a hard time? Come on. Select everything, please. Okay. And I'm going to send that over. Oh, I know. Oh, so gauche. So gauche.
I'm glad you did the Jaddy Chill one because I was going to do that too.
Okay.
That's all right, to
let's
Brent.
See.
And
Daddy Chill.
And it didn't copy. Oh, my Lance.
Oh, yeah,
this
that's not working,
chopped
Brent.
Chopped out. And it.
This is why I sent the sleepy gif. Falling asleep over here.
Why, Atlanta? Why? Just fucking work, my guy. What if I send it again?
we keep ruining your link.
Yeah. No, but I keep sending it and like the hyperlink not want it. Okay.
This one works.
Okay. But if for some reason it wasn't hyperlinking, I'm like, why is this not happening? But yeah, you can sort of like skip around through that video and just see this guy just making like a horse. Just like from memory.
Wow.
So it's pretty crazy.
Oh, that's crazy.
It's like really super fucking accurate. Just horse. Just like bip, 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 here's a horse.
Wow, yeah. Look at that. It's a little chubby of a horse, but
oh
I
my,
love it.
Brent, when I said sculpting elephants earlier in the in the episode. Mm-hmm. This was the guy that I
This is the guy you're thinking of?
That I was thinking of. I saw him in something.
Yeah, he's a really kind of like world-renowned sculptor now, and that's just kind of his thing, is that he just has this sort of savant-like ability to just make sculptures from memory of animals. And
that's awesome. You
know, so it's pretty cool stuff. So I have one more guy I want to talk about now, this guy Jason Paget. So although many acquired savants have musical or artistic abilities, Jason Paget's talents are mathematical. After an attack outside a karaoke bar in 2002, the furniture salesman had a concussion, PTSD, and eventually had acquired mathematical genius as well. So, unfortunately, it's kind of a sad story for this guy. He just basically got assaulted outside of a karaoke bar where he was concussed and left him like with this really bad PTSD and like traumatic brain injury.
Oof.
That caused him to develop like severe anxiety and like agoraphobia. But then also over time, Paget developed the ability to visualize complex math and physics topics after the attack. But he didn't even go beyond pre-algebra in his studies in school. So like this guy was like not a math guy at all.
Oh yeah.
Wow. He like was not necessarily like very adept at math at all when he was going through high school and college, but became like super like savant like in visualizing different mathematical equations and concepts.
Dude,
after
I would
this
hate
injury
that. If I got beat up and I was good at math.
Yeah, so I'm sending a picture right
Let's
now.
Let's beat
this
him
is
up again.
That
was
like
a nerd.
So this is like something that he sort of like created
oh, wow.
to visualize
how he sees
what concept.
It.
Jason likes drawing circles made up of increasingly many triangles. Oh, there goes my microphone. What he refers to as an illustration of pi. So this is basically him like wow. illustrating the concept of pi.
I mean, it's cool.
When I was in like ninth
sure
grade
ratios or something.
My science teacher like made us watch a video about a savant who like visualized math, and he like tries to describe what the way he sees numbers, and it was all like it wasn't like numbers like you would picture in your head, like how you would see numbers floating around. It was like colors and like shapes, and that's how he did math equations. And so like
yeah,
it would just he would think of an equation. And it would spit out the shape, and he'd be like, yeah, that's 52. And it just made yeah. sense to him. And it's like, man, that's incredible. That's what this reminds me of. It's like...
Yeah, it's kind of this crossover of, like, how I mentioned earlier, some of these acquired savants, like, acquire sort of, like, synesthesic,
yeah.
Like, abilities. This one, it kind of, like, is sort of a combination of, like, the ability to process advanced mathematics and physics, and also this, like... synesthesia like element of like the visualization of these things
yeah.
like as these like shapes or whatever.
It's insane.
So Padgett I already basically went over that. So this is a quote from him. He said, I see shapes and angles everywhere in real life now, from the geometry of a rainbow to the fractals in water spiraling down the drain, Padgett told Live Science. It's just really beautiful.
Oh, Brent, this is the guy.
It is the same guy.
Yeah, it's the same guy.
Okay, so soon after the attack, Padgett suffered from PTSD and debilitating social anxiety, but at the same time, he noticed everything looking different. He described his vision as discrete picture frames with a line connecting them, but still at real speed. So if you think of vision as the brain taking pictures all the time and smoothing them into video... it's as though Padgett sees the frames without the smoothing. So, like, everything is sort of like, he could see, like, every individual frame
wow.
of everything he sees. In addition, everything has a pixelated look, he said, sort of this synesthesia, like, aspect. With Padgett's new vision came an astounding mathematical drawing ability. He started sketching circles made out of overlapping triangles, which helped him understand the concept of pi, the ratio of a circle's circumference to its diameter. There's no such thing as a perfect circle, he said, which he knows because he can always see the edges of a polygon that approximates the circle.
Wow.
So he just like has this like kind of like superhuman abilities to sort of like to see all these like ratios within everything with any shape or whatever, and can kind of calculate it and sort of draw it out just from looking at things. You know, it's very interesting.
That is very interesting.
So that's pretty much all I have on that. I kind of was reading through this one study. Let me say this. I was reading this article that talked about this one study. Now, huge grain of salt alert. The website that I found this particular study referenced in was Gaia.com, the same website that promoted Demi Lovato's weird alien.
That's not a grain of salt. That's a big mountain of salt.
Yeah.
Bog episode, I get ads for the freaking Gaia like streaming service on my YouTube thing.
And it's, yeah.
God damn it, I want this stupid. And like they all start and they're like, we have spoken to God. Or like, you don't need the government to contact extraterrestrials. And it's
the
like,
only Gaia I care about is the Gaia from Horizon Zero Dawn and Forbidden West.
And our subordinate functions.
Yes. Or I guess the real Gaia, like, you know, the real world. Like maybe that too, I guess.
Mother Earth.
Like maybe the real
world.
Waka waka. So yeah. So the study was quoted in this particular article, which I was like, it's interesting. It's interesting.
Okay.
It's a very small study, so I would definitely not take it as like proof of anything in particular.
A study but
it
of is five at least people interesting. Found.
It's basically like 12 people, so like, so definitely very small study. So definitely need a much bigger sample size to really kind of like take the article, like takes what the study says and then like makes huge leaps. Which I did not include any of that. I was more interested in the actual study itself.
That's awesome.
So, but one study tested this idea of acquired savant syndrome by artificially stimulating an area of the brain they thought could be responsible for this type of mental facility, the left anterior temporal lobe, which we talked about, or the LATL. The researchers' theory was that an atypical dysfunction of the LATL would lead to overcompensation by the right brain, creating a hemispheric competition, which is sort of what we talked about earlier. So, like, this is not like a controversial idea in sort of like the neurophysiology community. This is kind of like something that a lot of neuroscientists believe to be the possible explanation for this. They don't know for sure.
Yeah,
this is
actually
what they believe.
That's based on what you told me. I kind of gathered that together, and based on my own kind of, that's kind of what I was thinking too. The hemisphere, the hemispherical conflicts and everything. That's basically what I thought.
Yeah. I'm surprised, frankly, you didn't say it first. I'm impressed with your restraint, Jack.
I just didn't want to come off as I just didn't want to steal the thunder of the reveal.
Yeah, you're just being humble, so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So working with healthy patients, the researchers used low-frequency magnetic stimulation, or RTMS, which is actually like a commonly used thing in like treating depression. It's just sort of like it's these magnetic stimulation treatments. The RTMS used asking them to draw. So basically what happens, the researchers used this RTMS and would ask the participants to draw animals and faces from memory beforehand, during the testing, and immediately after 45 minutes of stimulation. So three different times, once right before they did the TMS treatment, once during the TMS treatment, and once after they've been doing the treatment for 45 minutes. And then there, as a control, two patients were giving a quote-unquote sham treatment. So they weren't actually being, no TMS treatment was actually being done to them. They just said they were
doing
it.
Don't you mean all the patients were given a sham treatment?
Yeah. So they found that 4 out of the 9 subjects had major changes in the way they drew their pictures, with several reporting heightened awareness in their surroundings after the treatment. Many reported returning back to normal after 45 minutes after the treatment, and one patient said he could barely recognize the illustrations he made, even though he watched himself drawing it.
Wow.
So, kind of interesting. Another test was given to participants after they received the TMS treatments to their ability to estimate large quantities of objects. So basically, they would show them, like, here's, you know, a jar of jelly beans. Tell us how many you think are inside, you know, that sort of thing. So post-treatment, the ability to accurately guess the number of discrete elements improved in 10 of the 12 subjects. This mirrored the abilities seen in savants, as well as other mathematical phenomena like calendar counting. So, you know, very small. The two studies altogether, you're looking at like 20 people altogether. So, interesting data, but obviously too small of a sample size to really say whether or not that concrete proves anything. But it is kind of interesting.
Yeah,
so
it is.
I just kind of wanted. I just kind of wanted. That was the last bit of my notes there. It kind of like makes you wonder, like, again, we kind of like delved into this like halfway through the episode, but like kind of like what potential there is within the human brain that is just kind of like could be unlocked. But like, does this mean that like, there's a could possibly be ways down the road, like say through a treatment, like a TMS treatment, to unlock more of these abilities that may be like inherently within us that are just kind of like those neural pathways are just not like tapped into?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
It's a very interesting conversation, and I think that we'll find out a lot more about it in the next like 50, 60 years in science. I feel like a lot of the science, I mean, if you look at the last like 30 years of where technology and science has gone, it's like pretty incredible. So it's really exciting to think like what we're gonna see in the next
century. Dude, I hope we get some
century.
Good science before we're dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe some weird science.
Maybe, and then, like, dude. The
movie. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In the 1980s.
Like from weird the movie War Games. Mm. Where they...
Well, totally.
Isn't that the movie where they make the chick?
That's a weird science. So that's the one that I just referenced.
Oh, that is weird science. I thought they made the chicken War Games.
No, it's weird science.
No, that's the like, would you like to play a game?
Yeah, one, yeah.
Where like, we're basically like, is it Matthew Broderick where he basically like, just like beats like the war game computer or whatever at like preventing nuclear war or some shit?
Doesn't, yeah. Like, doesn't he like do army strategies for the like Gooberman, aren't they like, you're the best around?
Yeah, I'm pretty basically sure that's war games. A lot of 80s movies references today.
Yeah, like, I know.
80s and early 90s. I don't know what that's all about, but.
Weird science, though. That was one of those movies when you're just like a kid and you're like, whoa.
Whoa. And then you watch it as a
you can
and
make
like,
a girl. Yikes.
You're like, this is exploitative. Oh my God. This movie's problematic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dude, I wish I could just make different time. A woman. I wish I could just have every part of the woman except for the human part, dude.
Totally.
Oh, boy.
A universal thought had by all.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Just kidding.
Just kidding. Well, yeah, obviously. For the people who don't know us.
I'm not kidding.
Jack's not.
Oh, man.
Dude, I can't wait till we can figure out cloning and then just it can be just us guys, just bros.
Oh, God.
Just we can just clone ourselves over and over again. And
sadder years are for the bros.
Throw out with our clones out.
Sadder centuries are for the bros.
Here's a free sci-fi novel for anyone out there. Here's a free little sci-fi spin. And maybe we'll leave on this. Humanity has stopped giving birth, except everyone who's alive right now is everyone who's ever gonna be, and you just clone yourself when you die. You get cloned.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You got a bit of a Duncan Idaho situation. Just a bunch of like copies, but like. But, you know, we might insert our own little flavor in there for each copy so they can do our sort of like underhanded deeds that we want them to do for us.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Man. There's a little thing. Everyone gets cloned and you don't get your memories from the previous clone. But like maybe you die on a different cycle from your other. So you're on, you know, I'm Jack 58, but Bobby's only on Bobby 32.
Oh, you know. This sounds a lot like Horizon Zero Dawn.
No, it's not Horizon Zero Dawn, Bob.
I don't know. Cloning yourself to fulfill your will in the future?
Mm-hmm. No.
I don't know. Fulfill,
is this Horizon Zero Dawn? Is that what they do in
that
Horizon Zero Dawn?
They basically, the main character, clone? Aloy, she's a clone of like this like woman from like the extinction events who like helped create like the Zero Dawn system that like re-terraformed Earth after the fact. Yeah.
Oh, her mother's not her mother. It's her.
Yeah,
she doesn't have a mother. Her mother is like this woman, Elizabeth Sobeck, from the past. She's like a clone of her, created to sort of like help fulfill the promise of the Zero Dawn project that would restore life on Earth.
Is that why her name is fate? Is that why her name is Aloy? Because she's like an alloy of the past and the future.
Yeah, it's like this like weird like everything's metal, so we're kind of being a little tongue in cheek here.
Yeah,
Rust.
Wow.
That's CO.
Cool.
But we should probably leave it there. Yeah, we should
Me
probably
too.
Leave it.
Yeah. It's 2:00. I haven't had lunch yet. I'm hungry.
Yeah, we just sat down here for an hour and a half. So thank you guys for supporting us doing this on our weekends because you know, it's a labor of love, as we've said many times, and we're not getting paid to do this. So thank you for tuning in. We got plenty of other episodes.
Except for our few patrons, so thank you to our patrons.
Yes,
thank you.
Pay us to do this.
That's true. We did make $1 in the last year.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, we love you guys.
Yes. That sounded really disingenuous, but it was genuine. I'm just really hungry.
Yeah,
he's getting a little hangry, so we're getting a little punchy.
And on that note,
Yeah, so check out the website, brainbogglepodcast.com. There will be a blog there for this episode. Email brainbogglepodcast@gmail.com. Instagram is at brainboggled. Twitter is brainbogglepod. So just check out all that stuff. Maybe leave a 5-star review if you want to.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky, maybe I'll mail you some soup this month.
I don't know.
We'll see.
If you're lucky. Yeah,
just once, so.
I get soup once a month from Brent, and it's fantastic.
I make great soup.
Smelling yeah. good, dude. All right. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
See you next time.